At Belliblis's nod, one of the medics did something to the treatment wrap around the Imperial's upper arm, and as Han and Lando found places at the side of the bed, he coughed suddenly, and his eyes fluttered open. Major Himron? One of the security officers asked. Can you hear me, Major?
Yes,
the Imperial breathed, blinking a couple of times. His eyes drifted between the people standing around him, and it seemed to Han that he suddenly became more alert.
Yes,
he repeated, stronger this time.
Your attack has failed, the officer told him. Your men are all dead, and we're not sure yet whether you're going to live.
Himron sighed and closed his eyes, but that alertness was still in his face.
Fortunes of war, he said.
Belliblis leaned forward.
How did you get into the palace, Major?
Guess it can't hurt now,
Himron murmured. His breathing was becoming labored.
Back door. Put in, same time. Private passage system. Locked from inside. She let us in.
Someone let you in?
Belliblis said.
Who?
Himron opened his eyes.
Our contact here. Name Jade.
Belliblis threw Han a startled glance.
Mara Jade.
Yes.
Himron closed his eyes again, let out a deep breath.
Special agent of Empire, once called Emperor's Hand.
He fell silent, and seemed to sink a little deeper into the bed.
That's all I can permit right now, General Belliblis, the chief medic said. He needs rest, and we need to get him stabilized. In a day or two, perhaps he'll be strong enough to answer more questions.
That's all right,
one of the security officers said, heading for the door.
He's given us enough to start with.
Wait a minute,
Han called, starting after him.
Where are you going?
Where do you think?
The officer retorted.
I'm going to have Mara Jade put under arrest.
On what? The word of an Imperial officer?
He has no choice, Solo,
Belliblis said quietly, laying a hand on Han's shoulder.
A precautionary detention is required after an accusation is serious. Don't worry, we'll get it straightened out.
We'd better,
Han warned.
Imperial agent my eye. She took out at least three of them up there.
He broke off at the look of Lando's face.
Lando?
Slowly the other focused on him.
That's it,
he said quietly.
That's where I saw her before. She was one of the new dancers at Jabba the Hutt's place on Tatooine when we were setting up your rescue.
Han frowned.
At Jabba's?
Yes, and I'm not sure. But in all that confusion before we left for the Great Pit of Carcoon, I seem to remember hearing her ask Jabba to let her come along on the sail barge. No, not asking. Begging was more like it.
Han looked down at the unconscious Major Himron. The Emperor's Hand? And Luke had said she wanted to kill him. He shook off the thought.
I don't care where she was, he said. She still shot those Imperials off our backs up there. Come on, let's go help Leia get the twins settled, and then figure out what's going on around here.
Chapter 10.
The Whistler's Whirlpool Tap Cap on Trogan was one of the best examples Card had ever seen of a good idea ruined by the failure of its designers to think their whole plan through. Situated on the coast of Trogan's most densely populated continent, the Whirlpool had been built around a natural formation called the Drinking Cup, a bowl-shaped rock pit open to the sea at its base. Six times a day, Trogan's massive tidal shifts sent the water level inside the bowl either up or down, turning it into a violent whitewater maelstrom in the process. With the Tapcalf's tables arranged in concentric circles around the bowl, It made for a nice balance between luxury and the spectacular natural drama. A perfect drawing card for the billions of humans and aliens enamored of that combination. Or so the designers and their backers had thought. Unfortunately, they'd rather overlooked 3 points. First, that such a place was almost by definition a tourist attraction, dependent on the vagaries of that market. Second, that once the charm of the whirlpool itself wore off, the centralized design pretty well precluded remodeling the place for any other type of entertainment. And third, that even if such remodeling had occurred, the racket from the miniature breakers in the drinking cup would probably have drowned it out anyway. The people of the Kalaya Sage Lilu on Burchest had turned their fizzled tourist attraction into a trade center. The people of Trogon had simply abandoned the Whistler's Whirlpool.
"I keep expecting someone to buy this place and refurbish it," Card commented, looking around at the empty seats and tables as he and Daves walked down one of the aisles toward the drinking cup and the figure waiting there for them. The years of neglect showed, certainly, but the place wasn't nearly as bad as it could have been.
"I always kind of liked it myself," Daves agreed. "Kind of noisy, but you get that almost everywhere you go these days."
"Certainly made eavesdropping between tables difficult," Card said. "That alone made the place worthwhile. Hello, Gillespie."
"Card."
Gillespie nodded in greeting, getting up from his table and offering his hand.
"I was starting to wonder if you were really going to show."
"The meeting's not for another 2 hours," Apes reminded him.
"Oh, come on," Gillespie said with a sly grin. "Since when does Talon Card ever arrive anywhere on time? Though you could have saved yourself the trouble. My people have already checked things out."
"I appreciate the effort," Card said,
which was not to say, of course, that he was going to pull his own people off that same job. With the Empire breathing down his neck, and an Imperial garrison only 20 kilometers away, a little extra security couldn't hurt.
"You have the guest list."
"Right here," Gillespie said, picking up a data pad and handing it over. "Afraid it's not as long as I'd hoped."
"And that's all right," Card assured him, running his eyes down the list. Small, certainly, but highly select, with some of the biggest names in smuggling coming personally. Brask, Partah, Elor, Dravis, that would be Billy's group. Billy himself didn't get around too much anymore. Mazik, Klingon the Zahethra, Ferrier. He looked up sharply.
"Ferrier?"
he asked.
"Niles Ferrier? The spaceship thief?"
"Yeah, that's him."
Gillespie nodded, frowning.
"He does smuggling, too."
"He also works for the Empire,"
Card countered.
"So do we," Gillespie shrugged. "Last I heard, so did you."
"I'm not talking about smuggling merchandise to or from Imperial worlds," Card said. "I'm talking about working directly for Grand Admiral Thrawn, doing such minor jobs as snatching the man who located the Katana fleet for him."
Gillespie's face tightened just noticeably, remembering perhaps his mad scramble off Yukio one step ahead of the Imperial invasion force in those same Katana fleet ships.
"Ferrier did that?"
"And seemed to enjoy doing it,"
Card told him, pulling out his comlink and thumbing it on.
"Lacton?"
"Right here."
Lacton's voice came promptly from the comlink.
"How do things look at the garrison?"
"Like a morgue on its day off,"
Lacton said wryly.
"There hasn't been any movement in or out of the place for at least 3 hours.
Card cocked an eyebrow.
"Indeed. That's very interesting. How about flights in or out, or activity within the garrison grounds themselves?"
"Nothing of either. No kidding, Card. The place looks completely dead. Must have gotten some new training hollows in or something."
Card smiled tightly.
"Yes, I'm sure that's it. All right, keep on them. Let me know immediately if there's activity of any sort."
"You got it. Out."
Card thumbed off the comlink and returned it to his belt.
"The Imperials aren't moving from the garrison," he told the others. "Apparently not at all."
"Isn't that the way we want it?"
Gillespie asked.
They can't drop a hammer on the party if they're snugged up there in their barracks.
Agreed. Card nodded. On the other hand, I've never yet heard of an Imperial garrison simply taking a day off.
Point, Gillespie admitted. Unless this big campaign of Thrawn's has all these third-rate garrisons undermanned.
All the more reason for them to be running daily patrols as a visible show of force, Card said. A man like Grand Admiral Thrawn counts on his opponent's perceptions to fill in the gaps in his actual strength.
Maybe we should cancel the meeting, Abe suggested, looking uneasily back at the entrance. Could be they're setting us up.
Card looked past Gillespie to the churning water sloshing up the walls of the drinking cup. In just under 2 hours, the water would be at its lowest and quietest level, which was why he'd arranged the meeting for then. If he called it off now, admitted to all these big-time smugglers that the Empire had Talon Card jumping at Shadows.
No, he said slowly. We'll stay. Our guests won't exactly be sitting here helpless, after all. And we should have adequate warning of any official moves against us.
He smiled thinly.
Actually, it's almost worth a risk, just to see what they have in mind.
Gillespie shrugged. Maybe they're not planning anything at all. Maybe we chicaned Imperial intelligence so good that they missed this completely.
That hardly sounds like the Imperial intelligence we all know and love,
Card said, looking around. Still, we have 2 hours before the meeting. Let's see what we can arrange, shall we?
They sat there in silence, each of the individuals and small groups sitting around its own table, while he made his pitch. And as he finished and looked around at them, Card knew they weren't convinced. Brask made it official.
You speak well, Card,
the Brub said, his thin tongue flicking out between his lips as he tasted the air.
One might say passionately, if such a word could ever be said to apply to you. But you do not persuade.
Do I truly not persuade, Brask? Card countered. Or do I merely fail to overcome your reluctance to stand up to the Empire?
Brask's expression didn't change, but the pitted gray-green skin of his face, about all of him that was visible outside his body armor, turned a little grayer.
The Empire pays well for smuggled goods, he said.
And for slaves as well?
Partaw demanded, in the sing-song Hodin language. Her snake-like head appendages bounced gently as she snapped her mouth in a Hodin gesture of contempt.
And for victims of Kidna, you are no better than was the Hutt.
One of Brask's bodyguards shifted in his seat. A man, Card knew, who had escaped with Brask from Jabba the Hutt's indentured servitude when Luke Skywalker and his allies had chopped off the head of that organization.
No one who knew the Hutt would say that,
he growled, jabbing a stiff finger on the table beside him for emphasis.
We're not here to argue,
Card said, before Partaw or any of her entourage could respond.
Why are we here?
Mazik spoke up, lounging in his seat between a horn-headed Gotal and a decorative but vacant-faced woman with her hair done up in elaborate plaitlets around half a dozen large enameled needles.
You'll forgive me, Card, but this sounds very much like a New Republic recruitment speech.
Yeah, and Han Solo's already pitched that one to us,
Dravis agreed, propping his feet up on his table.
Billy's already said he wasn't interested in hauling the New Republic's cargo.
Too dangerous,
Klingon put in, shaking his shaggy black and white striped mane.
Far too dangerous.
Really?
Card said, feigning surprise.
Why is it dangerous?
You must be joking,
the Zahethra rumbled, shaking his mane again.
With Imperial harassment of New Republic shipping as it is, you take your life in claw grip every time you lift off.
So what you're saying, Card suggested, is that Imperial strength is becoming increasingly dangerous to our business activities.
Oh, no, you don't, Card,
Brask said, waving a large finger toward him.
You're not going to persuade us into going along with this scheme by twisting our words.
I haven't suggested any schemes, Brask, Card said. All I've suggested is that we provide the New Republic with any useful information we might happen to come across in the course of our activities.
And you don't think the Empire would find this activity unacceptable?
Brask asked.
Since when do we care what the Empire thinks?
Partok countered.
Since Grand Admiral Thrawn took command,
Brask said bluntly.
I've heard the stories of this warlord, Partok. It was he who forced my world under the Imperial Shroud.
That ought to be a good reason for you to stand up to him, Gillespie pointed out. If you're afraid of what Thrawn might do to you now, just think what'll happen to you if he gets the whole galaxy under the Imperial Shroud again.
Nothing will happen to us if we don't oppose him,
Brask insisted.
They need our services too much for that.
That's a nice theory,
a voice spoke up from near the back of the room.
But I can tell you right now, it won't hold a mug's worth of vacuum.
Card focused on the speaker. He was a big, thick-built human with dark hair and a beard, a thin, unlit cigar clenched in his teeth. And you are? Card asked, though he was pretty sure he knew.
Niles Ferrier,
the other identified himself.
And I can tell you flat out that minding your own business isn't gonna do you a blame bit of good if Thrawn decides he wants you.
And yet he pays well, Mazik said, idly stroking the hand of his female companion. Or so I've heard.
You've heard that, huh?
Ferrier growled.
Have you also heard that he grabbed me off Nukov and confiscated my ship? And then ordered me out on a nasty little errand for him aboard a bomb-rigged intelligence bucket? Oh, and go ahead and guess what the penalty was going to be if we couldn't do it.
Card looked around the room, listening to the gently sloshing water in the drinking cup behind him and holding his silence. This was hardly the way Solo had described Ferrier's involvement, and all the other things being equal, he would probably trust Solo's rendition over the ship thieves. Still, it was always possible Solo had misinterpreted things. And if Ferrier's story helped convince the others that the Empire had to be opposed...
Were you paid for all your trouble? Mazik asked.
Course I was paid,
Ferrier sniffed.
That's not the point.
It is for me,
Mazik said, turning back to look at Card.
Sorry, Card, but I still haven't heard any good reason for me to stick my neck out this way.
What about the Empire's new traffic in clones? Card reminded him. Doesn't that worry you?
I'm not especially happy about it, no,
Mazik conceded.
But I figure that's the New Republic's problem, not ours.
When does it become our problem?
Partok demanded.
When the Empire has replaced our smugglers with these clones?
No one's gonna replace us with clones, Dravis said. You know, Brask is right, Card. The Empire needs us too much to bother us, provided we don't take sides.
Exactly, Mazik said. We're businessmen, pure and simple. I, for one, intend to stay that way. If the New Republic can outbid the Empire for information, I'll be happy to sell it to them. If not...
He shrugged. Card nodded, privately conceding defeat. Partok might be willing to discuss the matter further, and possibly one or two others. Elor, perhaps. The Duro had so far stayed out of the conversation, which with his species was often a sign of agreement. But none of the rest were convinced, and pushing them further at this point would only annoy them. Later, perhaps, they might be willing to accept the realities of the Empire's threat.
Very well, he said. I think it's clear now where all of you stand on this. Thank you for your time. Perhaps we can plan to meet again after...
And without warning, the back of the Whistler's whirlpool blew in.
Stay where you are!
An amplified voice shouted through the din.
Face forward! No one move! Everyone here is under Imperial detention.
Card squinted over the heads of his suddenly frozen audience to the rear of the building. Through the smoke and dust, he could see a double line of about 30 Imperial Army troops crunching their way across the debris where the back wall had been, their flanks protected by two pair of white armored stormtroopers. Behind them, almost obscured by the haze, he could see two Chariot command speeders hovering in backup positions.
So they came to the party after all, he murmured. With a big hammer,
Gillespie agreed tightly from beside him.
Looks like you were right about Ferrier.
Perhaps. Card looked over at Ferrier, half expecting to see a triumphant smirk on the big man's face. But Ferrier wasn't looking at him. His attention was slightly off to the side, not looking at the approaching troopers, but at a section of wall to the right of the new hole. Card followed the line of his gaze, just in time to see a solid black shadow detach itself from the wall and move silently up behind one set of flanking stormtroopers.
On the other hand, perhaps not,
he told Gillespie, nodding slightly toward the shadow.
Take a look. Just past Elor's shoulder.
Gillespie inhaled sharply.
What in hell's name is that?
Ferrier's pet devil, I think,
Card said.
Sometimes called wraiths. Solo told me about him. This is it. Everyone ready?
We're ready,
Gillespie said, and there were echoing murmurs from behind them. Card swept his gaze across his fellow smugglers and their aides, catching each pair of eyes in turn. They gazed back, their shock at the ambush rapidly turning to a cold anger. And they, too, were ready. The shadow of Ferrier's Defil reached the end of the approaching line of Imperials, and suddenly one of the stormtroopers was hurled bodily off his feet to slam crosswise into his companion. The nearest troopers reacted instantly, swinging their weapons to the side as they searched for the unseen attacker.
Now,
Card murmured, and from the corner of his eye, he saw the long muzzles of two Blastech A-280 blaster rifles swing up over the rim of the drinking cup and open fire. The first salvo cut through the center of the line, taking out a handful of the Imperials before the rest were able to dive for cover among the empty tables and chairs. Card took a long step forward, tipping over the nearest table and dropping to one knee behind it. An almost unnecessary precaution. The Imperials' attention had been distracted away from their intended prisoners for a fatal half-second. And even as Card yanked out his weapon, the entire room exploded into blaster fire. Brask and his bodyguards took out an entire squad of troopers in the first 5 seconds with a synchronized fire that showed the Brug hadn't forgotten his mercenary background. Partha's entourage was concentrating on the other end of the line, their weapons smaller and less devastating than Brask's heavy blaster pistols, but more than enough to keep the Imperials pinned down. Dravis, Elor, and Klingon were taking advantage of that cover fire to pick off the remaining troopers one by one. Mazik, in contrast, was ignoring the nearer threat of the troopers to blast away at the Chariot command speeders outside.
A good idea, actually.
Aves, Fane,
Card shouted over the din.
Concentrate fire on the Chariots.
There were shouts of acknowledgement from the edge of the drinking cup behind him, and the rifle blast sizzling past his shoulder shifted their aim. Card eased a little over his table, caught a glimpse of Mazik's female companion, her plaited hair down around her shoulders now, and her face no longer blank, as she hurled the last of her enameled needles with lethal accuracy at one of the troopers. Another Imperial lunged up out of cover, bringing his rifle to bear on her, falling backward again as Card's shot caught him square in the torso. A pair of shots hit his cover table, sending clouds of splinters into the air and forcing him to drop to the floor. From outside came the sound of a massive explosion, echoed an instant later by a second blast. And then, suddenly, it was all over. Carefully, Card eased up over his table again. The others were doing likewise, weapons held at the ready as they surveyed the wreckage around them. Klingon was holding an arm gingerly out from his body as he dug in his belt pack for a bandage. Brask's tunic was burned away in several places, the body armor beneath it blackened and blistered.
Everyone all right? Card called.
Mazik straightened up. Even at this distance, Card could see the white knuckles gripping his blaster.
They got Lishma, he said, his voice deadly quiet.
He wasn't even shooting.
Card dropped his gaze to the broken table at Mazik's feet, and the Gotel lying motionless and half-hidden beneath it.
I'm sorry, he said, and meant it. He'd always rather liked the Gotel people.
I'm sorry, too, Mazik said, jamming his blaster back into its holster and looking at Card with smoldering eyes. But the Empire's going to be a lot sorrier. Okay, Card, I'm convinced. Where do I sign up?
Somewhere far away from here, I think, Card said, peering out the shattered wall at the burning chariots as he pulled out his comlink.
No one was moving out there, but that wouldn't last.
They'll surely have backup on the way.
Lacton, Torv, you there?
Right here,
Torv's voice came.
What in space was all that?
The Imperials decided they wanted to play after all, Card told him grimly. Sneaked in with a couple of chariots. Anyone stirring in either of your areas?
Not here. Wherever they came from. They didn't start at the spaceport.
Ditto here,
Lacton put in.
Garrison still quiet as a grave.
Let's hope it stays that way for a few more minutes, Card said.
Pass the word to the others. We're pulling back to the ship.
On our way. See you there.
Card flicked off the comlink and turned around. Gillespie was just helping Aves and Fane pull themselves out over the lip of the drinking cup, the web harnesses that had held them suspended just beneath the rocky edge, trailing behind them.
Nicely done, gentlemen, he complimented them.
Thank you.
Our pleasure,
Aves grunted, popping his harness and accepting his blaster rifle back from Gillespie. Even with the water level at its lowest, he noticed the turbulence had managed to soak both men up to their knees.
Time to make ourselves scarce?
Just as soon as we can, Card agreed, turning back to the other smugglers. Well, gentlefolk, we'll see you in space.
There was no ambush waiting for them by the wild card. No ambush, no fighter pursuit, no Imperial Star Destroyer lurking in orbit for them. From all appearances, the incident back at the Whistler's Whirlpool might just have well been an elaborate mass hallucination, except for the destruction to the Tapcalf, and the gutted chariots, and the very real burns. And, of course, the dead Gotel.
So what's the plan?
Dravis asked.
You want us to help hunt down this clone pipeline you mentioned, right?
Yes, Card told him. We know it goes through Podaris, so Ori's sector is the place to start.
It once went through Podaris,
Klingon pointed out.
Thrawn could have moved it by now.
Though presumably not without leaving some traces we can backtrack, Card said. So, have we an agreement?
My group's with you,
Ferrier put in promptly.
Matter of fact, Card, if you want, I'll see what I can do about getting your people some real fighting ships.
I may take you up on that, Card promised. Parta?
We will assist in the search,
Parta said, her voice about as angry as Card had ever heard it. The death of the Gotel was hitting her almost as hard as it had hit Mazik.
The Empire must be taught a lesson.
Thank you, Card said. Mazik?
I agree with Parta, he said coldly. But I think the lesson needs to be a bit more eye-catching. You go ahead and do your clone hunts. Elor and I have something else in mind.
Card looked at Aves, who shrugged.
If he wants to go slap their hands, who are we to stop him? The other murmured.
Card shrugged back and nodded.
All right, he said to Mazik. Good luck. Try not to bite off more than you can chew.
We won't, Mazik said. We're heading out. See you later.
At the far starboard edge of the viewport, two of the ships and their loose formation flickered with pseudo-motion and vanished into hyperspace.
That just leaves you, Brask, Card prompted. What do you say?
There was a long, subtly voiced sigh from the comm speaker, one of many untranslatable brub-verbal gestures.
I cannot and will not stand against Grand Admiral Thrawn,
he said at last.
To give information to the New Republic would be to invite his hatred and wrath upon me.
another voiced sigh.
But I will also not interfere with your activities or bring them to his attention.
Fair enough,
Card nodded. It was, in fact, far more than he had expected from Brask. The Brub's fear of the Empire ran deep.
Well then, let's organize our groups and plan to reconvene over Chazwa in, say, 5 days. Good luck, all.
The others acknowledged and signed off, and one by one made their jumps to light speed.
So much for staying neutral,
Abe sighed as he checked the nav computer.
Mara's gonna have a fit when she finds out. When is she coming back, by the way?
As soon as I can find a way to get her here,
Card said, feeling a twinge of guilt. It had been several days since he'd gotten the message that she and Ghent were ready to rejoin him. A message that had probably seen several more days in reaching him in the first place. She was probably ready to bite hull metal by now.
After that last raise and the Imperial price on us, there are probably 20 bounty hunters waiting off Coruscant for us to show up.
Aves shifted uncomfortably.
Is that what you think happened down there? Some bounty hunter got wind of the meeting and tipped off the Imperials?
Card gazed out at the stars.
I really don't know what all that was about, he admitted. Bounty hunters generally avoid tipping off the authorities unless they already have a financial agreement. On the other hand, when the Imperials go to the effort of carrying out a raid, one expects them to do a more competent job of it.
Unless they were just tailing Gillespie and didn't know the rest of us were there,
Abe suggested hesitantly.
Could be that 3 squads of troops and a couple of chariots is all he rates.
I suppose that's possible,
Card conceded.
Hard to believe their intelligence was that spotty, though. Well, I'll have our people on Trogan make some quiet inquiries. See if they can backtrack that unit and find out where the tip-off came from. In the meantime, we have a hunt to organize. Let's get to it.
Niles Ferrier was smiling behind that unkempt beard of his, Pelion noticed, as the stormtroopers escorted him across the bridge. A smug, highly self-satisfied type of smile that showed he had no idea whatsoever why he'd been brought to the Chimera.
He's here, Admiral,
Pelion murmured.
I know,
Thrawn said calmly, his back to the approaching spaceship thief. Calmly, but with a deadly look in his glowing red eyes. Grimacing, Pelion braced himself. This wasn't going to be pretty. The group reached Thrawn's command chair and halted.
Niles Ferrier, Admiral,
the stormtrooper commander stated.
As per orders.
For a long moment, the Grand Admiral didn't move. And as Pelion watched, the smirk on Ferrier's face slipped a bit.
You were on Trogan 2 days ago,
Thrawn said at last, still not turning around.
You met with 2 men currently wanted by the Empire,
Talon Card and Samuel Tomas Gillespie.
You also persuaded a small and unprepared task force under one Lieutenant Reynold Kosk to launch a rash attack on this meeting, an attack which failed. Is all this true?
Sure is,
Ferrier nodded.
See, that's why I sent you that message, so you'd know.
Then I should like to hear your reasons.
Thrawn cut him off, swiveling his chair around at last to gaze up at the thief.
Why I should not order your immediate execution.
Ferrier's mouth dropped open.
What?
He said.
But I've gotten in with Card. He trusts me now. See, that was the whole idea. I can dig out the rest of his gang and deliver the whole bunch to you.
He trailed off, his throat bobbing as he swallowed.
You were directly responsible for the deaths of 4 stormtroopers and 32 Imperial Army troops,
Thrawn continued.
Also for the destruction of 2 chariot command speeders and their crews. I am not the Lord Darth Vader, Ferrier. I do not spend my men recklessly, nor do I take their deaths lightly.
The color was starting to leave Ferrier's face.
Sir, Admiral, I know that you've put a bounty on Card's whole group of almost...
But all that pales in comparison to the utter disaster you've created.
Thrawn cut him off again.
Intelligence informed me of this meeting of smuggler chiefs almost 4 days ago. I knew the location, the timing, and the probable guest list. And I had already given the Trogon garrison precise instructions. Precise instructions, Ferrier, to leave it strictly alone. Pelion hadn't thought Ferrier's face could get any paler. He was wrong.
But I don't get it.
I'm sure you don't, Thrawn said, his voice deadly quiet. He gestured, and from his position beside Thrawn's chair, the Nogri bodyguard Rook took a step forward. But it's really quite simple. I know these smugglers, Ferrier. I've studied their operations, and I've made it a point to deal personally with each of them at least once over the past year. None of them wants to become entangled in this war. And without your staged attack, I'm quite certain they would have left Trogon convinced that they could sit things out in traditional smuggler neutrality. He gestured again to Rook, and suddenly the Nogri's slender assassin's knife was in his hand. The result of your interference, he continued quietly, has been to unite them against the Empire. Precisely the turn of events I'd gone to great lengths to avoid. His glowing eyes bored into Ferrier's face. And I do not appreciate having my efforts wasted. Ferrier's eyes flicked back and forth between Thrawn and the blade in Rook's hand, his face now gone from pasty white to gray.
I'm sorry, Admiral,
he said, the words coming out with obvious difficulty.
I didn't mean... I mean... Just give me another chance, huh? Just one more chance. I can deliver Card. I swear to you. Well, hey, I mean, never mind even Card. I'll deliver all of them to you.
He ran out of words and just stood there looking sick. Thrawn let him hang for another few heartbeats.
You are a small-minded fool, Ferrier, he said at last. But even fools occasionally have their uses. You will have one more chance. One last chance.
I trust I make myself clear.
Yes, Admiral, real clear,
Ferrier said, his head jerking up and down in something closer to a twitch than a nod.
Good, Thrawn gestured, and Rook's knife vanished. You can start by telling me exactly what they have planned.
Sure.
Ferrier took a shuddering breath.
Card, Parta, and Klingon are going to meet in... I guess 3 days now, at Chazwa. Oh, they know you're running your new clones through Oris Sector.
Do they? Thrawn said evenly. And they intend to stop it?
No, just find out where it's coming from. Then they're going to tell the New Republic. Brask isn't going along, but he said he wouldn't stop them either. Dravis is going to check with Billy and get back to them. And Mazik and Elor have something else planned. They didn't say what.
He ran out of words or air and stopped.
All right, Thrawn said after a moment. This is what you're going to do. You and your people will meet Card and the others at Chazwa on schedule. You will take Card a gift, an assault shuttle you stole from the Hishium patrol station.
Rigged, right?
Ferrier nodded eagerly.
Yeah, that was my idea, too. Give him some rigged ships that...
Card will, of course, examine this gift thoroughly, Thrawn interrupted him, his patience clearly becoming strained. The ship, therefore, will be in perfect condition. Its purpose is merely to establish your credibility, assuming you still have any.
Ferrier's lip twisted.
Yes, sir. And then?
You will continue to report on Card's activities, Thrawn told him. And from time to time, I'll be sending you further instructions. Instructions which you will carry out instantly and without question. Is that clear?
Sure,
Ferrier said.
Don't worry, Admiral. You can count on me.
I certainly hope so.
Deliberately, Thrawn looked at Rook.
Because I would hate to have to send Rook to pay you a visit. I trust I make myself understood.
Ferrier looked at Rook, too, and swallowed hard.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
Good.
He swiveled his chair to face away from Ferrier again.
Commander, escort our guest back to his ship, and see that his people are checked out on the assault shuttle I've had prepared for them.
Yes, sir,
the stormtrooper commander said. He gave Ferrier a nudge, and the group turned and headed aft.
Go with them, Rook, Thrawn said. Ferrier has a small mind, and I want it to leave here filled with the knowledge of what will happen if he trips over my plans again.
Yes, my lord,
the Nogri said, and slipped silently away after the departing ship thief. Thrawn turned to Pelion.
Your analysis, Captain.
Not a good situation, sir,
Pelion
said,
but not as bad as it might have been. We have a potential line on Card's group, if you can believe Ferrier. And in the meantime, he and his new allies won't be doing anything but following the decoy trail we've already prepared for the rebellion.
And eventually they'll tire of that, and again go their separate ways, Thrawn agreed. His glowing eyes narrowed in thought. Particularly as the financial burden of lost Imperial business begins to take its toll. Still, that will take time.
What are the options?
Pelion asked.
Take Ferrier upon his offer to give them booby-trapped ships?
Thrawn smiled.
I have something more useful and satisfying in mind, Captain. Eventually, I'm sure some of the other smugglers will realize how unconvincing the Trogan attack really was. With a little judiciously planted evidence, perhaps we can persuade them that it was Card who was behind it.
Pelion blinked.
Card?
He repeated.
Why not? Thrawn asked. A deceitful and heavy-handed attempt, shall we say, to persuade the others that his fears about the Empire were justified. It would certainly lose Card any influence he might have over them, as well as possibly saving us the trouble of hunting him down ourselves.
It's something to think about, sir,
Pelion agreed diplomatically. The middle of a major offensive, in his opinion, was not the right time to be worrying about exacting vengeance on the dregs of the galaxy's underfringes. There would be plenty of time for that after the rebellion had been pounded into dust.
May I suggest, Admiral, that the stalled campaign of Qataris requires your attention?
Ron smiled again. Your devotion to duty is commendable, Captain.
He turned his head to gaze out the side viewport.
No word yet from Coruscant.
Not yet, sir,
Pelion said, checking the comm log update just to be sure.
But you remember what Himron said about first creating a data trail. He might have run into some delays.
Perhaps.
Thrawn turned back, and Pelion could see the slight tightness in his face.
Perhaps not. Still, even if we fail to obtain the twins for our beloved Jedi Master, Major Himron's fingering of Mara Jade should succeed in neutralizing her as a threat to us. For the moment, that's what's important.
He straightened in his chair.
Set course for the Qataris battle plane, Captain.
We'll leave as soon as Ferrier is clear.
Chapter 11.
The bulky man was turning into the grand corridor when Han finally caught up with him. His expression, that of a man in a hurry and in a rotten mood, besides. But that was okay. Han wasn't in all that great a mood either.
Colonel Bremen,
he said, falling in step beside the man just as he passed the first of the slender purple and green chawla trees that lined both sides of the grand corridor.
I want to talk to you a minute.
Bremen threw him an irritated glance.
If it's about Mara Jade Solo, I don't want to hear it.
She's still under house arrest,
Han said anyway.
I want to know why.
Gee, well maybe it has something to do with that Imperial attack 2 nights ago,
Bremen said sarcastically.
You suppose?
Could be,
Han agreed, batting at one of the chawla branches that was stretching a little too far from the trunk. The subtle turmoil of color taking place beneath the tree's transparent outer bark exploded into an angry red at the spot where the branch connected to it, the color shooting around the trunk in ripples as it slowly faded.
I guess it all depends on how much we're listening to Imperial rumor these days.
Bremen stopped short and spun to face him.
Look, Solo, what do you want from me?
He snapped. A new flush of pale red rippled across the challah tree Han had touched. And across the corridor, a group of diplomats sitting around a conversation ring looked up questioningly.
Look at the facts a minute, huh? Jade knew about the secret back door and the passages. She admits that outright. She was there on the scene before any alert was sounded. She admits that, too.
Well, so were Lando and General Bell Iblis,
Han said, feeling that thin plating of diplomacy that Leia had worked so hard to build starting to fail.
You haven't got them locked up.
The situations are hardly similar, are they?
Bremen shot back.
Calrissian and Bell Iblis have histories with the New Republic, and people here who vouch for them. Jade has neither.
Leia and I vouch for her,
Han told him, trying hard to ignore that whole thing about her wanting to kill Luke.
Isn't that good enough? Or are you just mad at her for doing your job for you?
It was the wrong thing to say. Bremen turned nearly as red as the challah tree had, his face hardening to something you could use for hull metal.
So she helped shoot some alleged Imperial agents,
he said frostily.
That proves absolutely nothing. Were the Grand Admiral pulling the strings out there, the entire raid could have been nothing more than an elaborate scheme to convince us she's on our side. Well, I'm sorry, but we're not buying today. She gets the full treatment. Record search, background search, acquaintance correlation, and a couple of question-answer sessions with our interrogators.
Terrific, Han snorted. If she's not on our side now, that'll pull her there for sure.
Bremen drew himself up to his full height.
We're not doing this to be popular, Solo. We're doing this to protect New Republic lives. Yours and your children's among them, if you recall. I presume Counselor Organa Solo will be at Mon Mothma's briefing. If she has any complaints or suggestions, she can present them there. Until then, I don't want to hear anything about Jade from anyone. Especially you. Is that clear, Captain Solo?
Han sighed.
Yeah, sure.
Good.
Spinning around again, Bremen continued on his way down the corridor. Han watched him go, glowering at his back.
You do have a way with people, don't you?
A familiar voice said wryly from beside him. Han turned in mild surprise.
Luke, when did you get back?
About 10 minutes ago, Luke told him, nodding down the corridor. I called your room and Winter told me you two had headed down here for a special meeting. I was hoping to catch you before you went in.
I'm not invited, actually,
Han said, throwing one last glare at Bremen's retreating back.
And Leia stopped by Mara's room first.
Ah, Mara.
Han looked back at his friend.
She was here when we needed her,
he reminded the younger man.
Luke grimaced. And I wasn't.
That wasn't what I meant,
Han protested.
I know, Luke assured him. But I still should have been here.
Well,
Han shrugged, not really sure what to say.
You can't always be here to protect her. That's what she's got me for.
Luke threw him a wry smile.
Right. I must have forgotten.
Han looked over his shoulder. Other diplomats and council aides were starting to show up, but no Leia yet.
Come on. She must have gotten hung up somewhere. We can meet her halfway.
I'm surprised you're letting her walk around the palace alone,
Luke commented as they headed back along the row of challah trees.
She's not exactly alone,
Han said dryly.
Chewie hasn't let her out of his sight since the attack. The big fuzzball even sleeps outside our door at night.
Must give you a safe feeling.
Yeah, the kids will probably grow up allergic to Wookiee hair.
He glanced over at Luke.
Where were you anyway? Your last message said you'd be back 3 days ago.
That was before I got stuck on...
Luke broke off, eyeing the people beginning to wander through the corridor.
I'll tell you later, he amended. Winter said that Mara was under house arrest?
Yeah. And it looks like she's gonna stay there.
Han growled.
At least till we can convince the bit pushers down in security that she's clear.
Yes, Luke said hesitantly. Well, that might not be as easy as it sounds.
Han frowned.
Why not?
Luke seemed to brace himself. Because she spent most of the war years as a personal assistant to the Emperor. Han stared at him.
I hope you're kidding.
I'm not, Luke said, shaking his head. He had her going all over the Empire doing jobs for him. They called her the Emperor's Hand, which was what that Imperial Major down in the medical wing had called her.
That's great, he told Luke, turning to face forward again. Just great. You could have told us.
I didn't think it was important, Luke said. She's not with the Empire now, that's for sure.
He threw Han a significant glance.
And I suppose most of us have things in our background we wouldn't want people talking about.
Somehow I don't think Bremen and his security hotshots are going to see it that way,
Han said grimly.
Well, we'll just have to convince that...
He broke off.
What is it?
Han asked.
I don't know, Luke said slowly. I just felt a disturbance in the Force.
Something cold settled into the pit of Han's stomach.
What kind of disturbance? He asked. You mean like danger?
No, Luke said, his forehead wrinkled with concentration. More like surprise or shock.
He looked at Han.
And I'm not sure, but I think it was coming from Leia.
Han's hand dropped to the grip of his blaster, his eyes flicking around the corridor.
Leia was up there with a former Imperial agent, and she was surprised enough for Luke to pick up on it.
You think we should run?
He said quietly.
No,
Luke said. His hand, Han noted, was fingering his lightsaber.
But we can walk fast.
From outside the door came the muffled voice of the G2RD guard droid. And with a tired sigh, Mara shut down her datapad and tossed it on the desk in front of her. Eventually, she assumed, security would get tired of these polite little sweetness-coated interrogation sessions. But if they were, it wasn't showing yet. Reaching up with the Force, she tried to identify her visitor, hoping at least that it wasn't that Bremen character again. It wasn't, and she had just enough time to get over her surprise before the door opened and Leia Organa Solo walked in.
Hello, Mara.
Organa Solo nodded in greeting. Behind her, the guard droid closed the door, giving Mara a brief glimpse of an obviously unhappy Wookiee.
I just stopped in to see how you were doing.
I'm just terrific,
Mara growled, still not sure whether getting Organa Solo instead of Bremen was a step up or a step down.
What was all that about outside?
Leia shook her head, and Mara caught a flicker of the other woman's annoyance.
Somebody in security apparently decided you shouldn't have more than one guest at a time, unless it was one of them. Chewie had to stay outside, and he wasn't very happy about it.
I take it he doesn't trust me.
Don't take it personally,
Leia assured her.
Wookiees take these life debts of theirs very seriously, you know. He's still pretty upset that he nearly lost all of us to that kidnap squad. Actually, at this point, he probably trusts you more than he trusts anyone else in the palace. I'm glad someone does,
Mara said, hearing the bitterness in her voice.
Maybe I should ask him to have a little talk with Colonel Bremen.
Organa Solo sighed.
I'm sorry about this, Mara. We've got a meeting downstairs in a few minutes, and I'm going to try to get you released. But I don't think Mon Mothma and Akbar will okay it until security finishes their check.
And when they found out that she really had been the Emperor's Hand.
I should have kept pushing Winter to get me a ship out of here. If you had, the twins and I would be in Imperial hands now,
Organa Solo said quietly.
On our way to be the prizes of his Jedi Master Sabaoth.
Mara felt her jaw tighten. Offhand, she couldn't think of many fates more horrible than that one.
You've already thanked me,
she muttered.
Let's just say you owe me one and leave it at that, okay?
Organa Solo smiled slightly.
I think we owe you a lot more than just one. she said. Mara looked her straight in the eye. Remember that when I kill your brother. Organa Solo didn't flinch. You still think you want to kill him?
I don't want to discuss it,
Mara told her, getting up from her chair and stalking over to the window.
I'm doing fine. You're going to try to get me out, and we're all glad I saved you from Sabaoth. Was there anything else?
She could feel Organa Solo's eyes studying her.
Not really,
the other said.
I just wanted to ask why you did it.
Mara stared out the window, feeling an uncomfortable swelling of emotion washing up against the heavy armor plate she'd worked so hard to build up around herself.
I don't know,
she said, vaguely surprised that she was even admitting it.
I've had 2 days of solitary to think it over, and I still don't know. Maybe,
she shrugged.
I guess it was just something about Thrawn trying to steal your children.
For a minute, Organa Solo was silent.
Where did you come from, Mara?
She asked at last.
Before the Emperor brought you to Coruscant.
Mara thought back.
I don't know. I remember the first time I met the Emperor, and the ride here in his private ship, but I don't have any memories of where I started from.
Do you remember how old you were? Mara shook her head.
Not really. I was old enough to talk to him, and to understand that I would be leaving home and going with him. But I can't pin it down any closer than that.
How about your parents? Do you remember them?
Only a little,
Mara said. Not much more than shadows. She hesitated.
I have a feeling, though, that they didn't want me to go.
I doubt the Emperor gave them any choice in the matter, Organa Solo said, her voice suddenly gentle.
What about you, Mara? Did you have any choice?
Mara smiled tightly through a sudden inexplicable welling up of tears.
So that's where you're going with this. You think I risked my life for your twins because I got taken away from my home the same way?
Were you?
No,
Mara said flatly, turning back to face her.
It wasn't like that. I just didn't want Sabaoth getting his crazy grip on them. Just leave it at that.
All right, Organa Solo said, in a voice that said she only half believed it. But if you ever want to talk more about it,
I know where to find you,
Mara finished for her. She still didn't believe she was telling Organa Solo all this, but down deep, she had to admit that it felt strangely good to talk about it. Maybe she was getting soft.
And you can call on me anytime.
Organa Solo smiled as she stood up.
I'd better get downstairs to the briefing. See what Thrawn's fighting clones are up to today.
Mara frowned.
What fighting clones?
It was Organa Solo's turn to frown.
You don't know? Know what? The Empire's found some Spa'arti cloning cylinders somewhere. They've been turning out huge numbers of clones to fight against us.
Mara stared at her, an icy chill running through her. Clones.
No one told me,
she whispered.
I'm sorry,
Organa Solo said.
I thought everyone knew. It was the main topic of conversation in the palace for nearly a month. I was in the medical wing,
Mara said mechanically.
Clones.
With the Katana fleet ships to fight from? And with the cold-blooded genius of Grand Admiral Thrawn to command them? It would be the Clone Wars all over again.
That's right. I'd forgotten,
Organa Solo acknowledged.
There was so much going on.
She was looking oddly at Mara.
Are you all right?
I'm fine,
Mara said, her voice sounding distant in her ears as the memories flashed across her mind like heat lightning.
A forest, a mountain, a hidden and very private warehouse of the Emperor's personal treasures,
and a vast chamber full of cloning tanks.
All right,
Organa Solo said, clearly not convinced, but equally unwilling to press the point.
Well, I'll see you later.
She reached again for the door handle.
Wait!
Organa Solo turned back.
Yes?
Mara took a deep breath. The very existence of the place had been a sacred trust, known to only a handful of people. The Emperor had made that clear time and time again. But for Thrawn to have a renewable army of clones to throw against the galaxy...